Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 17, Cat, Rat, and Dog, live in Seattle!
Yeah.
Woo! Yes, dude. So excited to be here.
So excited to be here for the Manatee Show.
For the Manatee Show. That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Two shows, two chapters, one day. This is going to be fun. We're in what I would refer to as the filet mignon of Prisoner of Azkaban. As far as the meat is concerned, this is like prime cut.
This is it. We're in the entree course right now.
Yeah.
We're done with the appetizers. Like, mysteries are about to be revealed.
Right.
Things are happening.
This chapter, I think, if anything else, is like a testament to why, like, marriage counseling isn't the worst thing, because good communication is absolutely key, and no one in this chapter will be communicating soundly.
Everyone is like, how vague can I be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all like, you know what would be great is if the end of this chapter had a really cool reveal. So let's just make sure we don't say anything that we mean.
Right.
The whole chapter.
Yeah, we'll build up to, because in real time, like, Lupin and Sirius are showmen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like thinking about it, like, how would the story be told?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes. After the fact. So Sirius is like, I'm going to be super impatient. Lupin's like, I'm going to take forever to get there.
Yeah.
Ron's leg is going to be hurting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ron has a really good chapter.
It's a good chapter for Ron.
For Ron.
Yeah. After I don't even know which one it was a few ago, like maybe chapter 14,
where
Harry and Ron are just they're like at an all time low.
They are. They're just like, Hermione, what is she up to? We don't like her anymore.
I know. But
how dare she?
She's right about everything.
She's right about everything.
She is.
Pretty much.
And in this chapter as well. So chapter 17, before we dive on in, we got to take a quick look at the chapter art here.
Yeah, we do.
I think it's, I know this reminds me of, like, you know, like reading circle when you're a kid.
Everybody,
you know,
see.
You know, it's like, yeah. And did everybody get a chance to see in the back there? We need to get like a big magnifying glass of some kind, because there actually is something about this chapter art that I've never spotted before, because if you look really carefully, you can see Ron's legs going into the Whomping Willow, which I think is kind of fun, but I have never noticed Sirius's tail.
I know, it looks like one of the branches.
Yeah. So just like a neat little detail there for the illustrator.
Yeah, I would have loved it if Ron's leg was sticking out at like just a weird angle.
Like the Family Guy, like classic, like
yeah, right over there.
But it hasn't broken yet.
He's
not all the way in the trunk.
Right. He is about to be broken.
Right. Yeah. That's the photo everybody wants of themselves, is the split second before their leg be broke.
Yeah. Right. That'd be such a funny picture. Because you'd be like, look, I'm smiling in this picture, but like, I kid you not, 5 seconds later, ER.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. A huge dog is about to drag me into a tree.
It's bad news. We thought things were good. That's sort of how the chapter starts.
Right. Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. So we are coming out of the end of the last chapter, the unmistakable swishing sound of an axe apparently killing Buckbeak off in the distance.
Hey, we all know that swishing sound.
We all know. I don't have to describe it to you.
You can hear it from miles away. You know, when you're out in the backyard.
Someone swinging an axe.
Yeah.
You know what it sounds like.
Right.
So that's what's happened here. And I love that just like the third sentence here. It's like, the very last rays of the setting sun were casting a bloody light over the long shadow grounds. And it's like, I love the description of that imagery, because it's like, these are like, It is literally the sun setting on like the last happy moment of Harry's life.
Oh,
you know, like at least until Voldemort is defeated.
It's, you know, it's basically all downhill from
here. It is downhill for a while. Like, he'll sort of date Ginny there. You know, that'll be good.
I was gonna say, maybe that's at the core of it, the real reason why he doesn't ever get a proper relationship with Cho, because then he would just be like kind of happy.
Right.
So it's like, okay, we're gonna throw you an obligatory high school failed relationship, and it's going to be not very good.
Not going to be good the whole time.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah, kind of a bummer.
But yeah, then right after your bloody sunset, which does sound a little bit as if the narrator of the story is attempting to lead you to believe that there's some other blood going on.
Well, it definitely makes it sound like Buckbeak is dead.
Oh yeah, for real. Yeah,
the sunset is representative of a dying hippogriff.
Right, yeah. Even this line we have, then behind them, they heard a wild howling.
Right.
And you're like, oh man. Like, because this is supposedly Hagrid.
Supposedly Hagrid, yeah.
And the important thing to keep in mind, again, at this stage in the story too, and how time travel works in the wizarding world, is that everything is always exactly how it always was. Hopefully I said that right.
Right, yeah. Everything happened the way it happened.
Yes. So it's like, this is what happened the first time in exactly the same way. So it's not like he's like, in one scenario, Buckbeak is murdered.
Right.
And in this particular situation, he's not.
Right.
I don't know.
So the howling is not actually Hagrid crying like they assume. It's actually Hagrid cheering.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Because he's come outside and he's like, you did it, Beaky.
Yeah!
You got away.
Yes. Exactly. But that's not what they think, because you have Ron up here who is paper white, and I love it when you get descriptions of the characters, the whiteness of their skin, like we had, Snape and his sour milk skin earlier in this book. Yeah.
And I think Hagrid was the color of parchment.
Parchment, yeah.
And also ruddy. His normally ruddy face, which somebody from like Britain wrote in, and they were like, ruddy means red.
Oh.
And I was like, you know, I would have thought of like ruddy as like, you know, negative or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like, you're ruddy.
Yeah,
face.
Like a kind of junky or grimy or something.
Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. This like ruddy old truck I've got out here.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Like you wouldn't think like, oh, what you're saying is like my red old truck outside.
Right. No. Yeah. Yeah. And be like that sort of broken down old truck outside.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. And then let's see. We have our bloody sunset. And then I love this line here because it kind of reinforces the same thing. And because like this whole evening is kind of like about the start of Voldemort coming back. So you have by the time they reached open ground, darkness was settling like a spell around them. And like that's literally what's happening. Like Peter's going to escape. And that is the start of Voldemort coming back. So this is like dark magic is settling like a spell around them.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, and especially going back to like the prediction we have from Trelawney a couple of chapters ago, it's like, you know, like this is supposed to be the evening where, you know, the servant will return to his master.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, as of evening, like that is when that's happening. Yeah. So I agree with you completely. Like that's definitely almost like a literal force of magic.
Right.
Dropping from the sky.
Right.
And it's
which
going to be
not for nothing, but then also the Dementors will do the exact same thing. They're
true.
Like forces of darkness coming from the sky.
Do you think that this darkness spell that they're talking about is why the movies got like really kind of hard to see?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know? Right. Like it's not us. We keep upping the brightness. It just looks the same.
There's nothing.
Saturation just plummeted.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's
yes.
gone.
Yeah. It looked like somebody poured a gallon of tea onto Half-Blood Prince by the time we got there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You love that tea filter.
Yes.
Yeah,
fantastic. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So as they're walking along here, Scabbers is just going crazy. The rat is wriggling madly. It eventually bites Ron. Which Ron, gotta say, having read ahead through the next chapter, is a freaking hero here because he is holding on to a creature that is biting and scratching his hands bloody, and he is not letting go.
I know. I mean, it's like how is he successfully gripping onto Scabbers, especially because it's gonna take a hot, you know, half hour being dragged through a tree, being confronted by a serial killer, breaking his leg, like before he finally relinquishes Scabbers.
Yeah, I think he's going to lose him for like a second here.
Okay.
And he'll recollect him. But yeah, he is going to be holding on to Scabbers all throughout, being dragged through the tree, having a broken leg, defending Harry, hearing the whole story. Yeah. And Scabbers is like not like calming down at all. Which to me, it's like, how is he perceiving Crookshanks? Because that is apparently what he's wriggling about. Like, Crookshanks is about to come attack him. And then Sirius as well. So maybe he's just like, if I'm in the open at all, I'm dead.
Right, yeah. Right. Yes. I don't know if, like, maybe if he's just like, oh, gosh, we're back around that Hermione girl, which means that Crookshanks is going to be back.
Exactly.
One way or another, that's exactly what happens.
That is exactly what's happening.
Crookshanks be like, as he flushed out again. I'm here.
I see.
I couldn't find him in Hagrid's hut for the life of me. Yeah. But as soon as he's in open ground, I got this. Heat vision.
So yeah, Crookshanks emerges from the shadows. And then I love the line where it just says, "Crookshanks," Hermione moaned. "No, go away." Because it's like, you can just hear the desperation in Hermione's voice when she sees the cat like, No.
This is like, terrible timing.
Like, I was just absolved of this exact crime for like 5 minutes.
Right.
Do not come prove me wrong right now, Crookshanks. We are on good terms right now.
We almost had it. Yep. But no, that's not what happens. And instead, Crookshanks comes closer. And Scabbers does slip between Ron's clutching fingers, hits the ground, and scampers away in one bound.
This is where, like, Ron throws off the invisibility cloak and just pelts away into the darkness. Like, I am surprised he still cares so much about the rat.
At this point, I've given up.
I hope
that doesn't take away my pet owner card, you know, anything. But at this point, I think I'm like, okay, me and you, like, this is not working out, clearly.
Right, like,
we are going our literal separate ways.
Right, yeah. Like, you know, because clearly at this point, Crookshanks didn't eat him. Like, so clearly he ran away, and now he's bitten you. And it's like, you kind of already mourned him.
Right.
You know, like, why do you still care?
You were sort of over it.
I guess it's a good thing he cares, because he does catch up to him. And catch him again. Let's see.
The line, though, that again, in the same exact vein, is he's like, "Gotcha! Get off, you stinking cat!"
Yeah.
It's like, Ron, just feed Scabbers to Crookshanks.
Yeah, just let him have it.
Think about how much trouble we could have saved.
Yeah.
If that had just been what happened.
I gotta say, though, this is some solid keeper foreshadowing for Ron.
Good point.
I don't know if if you put a mouse in front of me and we're like, "Hey, you want to race this cat to that mouse?" I'd be like, I can try, but
Bet.
Let's go.
Game on.
Ron's taking that bet, and he wins. He gets there before the cat. Yeah, I'm impressed.
This should have been the moment where Harry's like, "We gotta get you on the team next
year." I know,
year.
Right? Yeah, he should have brought... Where is he bringing this up with, like, McClagan's shouts? He's like, "Ron, you caught Scabbers in the dark running from a cat, man.
Right.
You're going to be fine.
We know you can block a bright red ball."
Yeah, right. In daylight. Come on now. Let's see. So Ron gets Scabbers back, and then we hear the soft powder go gigantic paws. Something's bounding towards them out of the dark. The enormous, pale-eyed, jet-black dog. And here we go. Sirius is on the scene.
It is underway.
Yeah.
And it's kind of actually amazing for Sirius here, who's normally, like, speaking of dexterity, is usually quite nimble in dog form. But his front paws does hit Harry in the chest, basically, like, knocking him clean over to the point where Harry rolls him off and says, it says, feeling as though his ribs were broken. So Sirius basically, like, form tackled, like, linebacker style.
Yeah,
Harry out in the open.
Yeah. Yeah, he's knocked him down. I guess he's just because he sees he has the wand. It's surprising that he hits Harry at all. But then, let's say, I love the line here, too, where it says Ron was on his feet. As the dog sprang back towards him, he pushed Harry aside. The dog's jaws fastened instead around Ron's outstretched arm. Because at this point, from their point of view, I guess Harry thinks the dog is after him because they keep seeing the Grim.
Right.
So,
that's like almost like one of the calibrations you have to, like, bring back to the surface, is that the first time you're reading this story, you would absolutely believe that Harry's the intended target. Like,
right.
Sometimes I think I'm so deep in the weeds at this point that I'm like, he's obviously not going for Harry here.
Right.
Like, I know what he's doing. I know what his motivations are.
Right. So it says instead around Ron as if it's, like, a mistake, but it's obviously not a mistake at all. His intended target is, well, Peter, but so that's why he needs Ron, because that's who's holding Peter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Then you get an idea of just how powerful Sirius is in his dog form, because he's able to drag Ron away as if he were a rag doll.
Right. Yeah. Like, that's, he's not going to be like a light person.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just dragging around. No problem. problem at all.
And then just when you think things couldn't get worse, you know, after, you know, rat bites and dog attacks and everything else, they discover that they have found themselves right underneath the Whomping Willow.
Right underneath the Whomping Willow.
Yeah. Friendliest of trees.
Friendliest of trees. It's
yeah.
a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like high five, except instead of five, it means face.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how the tree is just like, it's really like, it is equal opportunity. Don't come near me. I will hit you.
Yes. Yeah. It has no friends.
No friends. No, not at all. Although that being said, Sirius has like, it said like there at the base of the trunk was the dog dragging Ron. It's like, how did Sirius just manage to drag Ron through? No problem.
Maybe they were just getting thwacked the whole way through. So,
I guess so.
Real insult to injury moment going on here, because the next moment is a horrible crack. Cut the air like a gunshot because Ron's leg had been broken.
Ugh, I hate that imagery. It's like, I think for a long time I thought it said his ankle had broken, but it is definitely his leg. Like, oh, it's such a harder break.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. Ugh. Like you don't broken legs don't come easy.
You know?
Yeah. Like you got to work for it.
You got to work for it. Yeah. That's also how strong that Sirius is. He's just like, yeah, whatever.
Right. No big deal.
Yeah. No big deal. Breaking him through there. That's terrible.
Where's Gilderoy when you?
I know, yeah, you could have just gotten rid of those bones.
Just a nice little floppy glove leg.
I gotta tell you, it is impressive for Ron's like pain tolerance for this next chapter, though. For the next couple pages.
He has adrenaline pumping through him.
He does.
Something fierce.
Yeah.
But let's see here. So then Harry and Hermione basically reason out that if the dog can get into the trunk, then why not us?
You're optimistic.
Yes.
Optimistic.
Yeah.
They cannot, actually. This leads to gotta be maybe the cheesiest scene in the movies like ever.
It truly is.
Yeah.
Like they are playing like jump rope with the Whomping Willow.
Yeah.
I think that there's a scene where they're both standing and they both jump it together.
Yes.
And then, like, I think, like, Harry and Hermione are hanging on to the branch. It kind of, like, whips around kind of 3D style.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like...
Oh, it looks... I mean, Hermione looks to camera.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then at some point, they successfully, like, release at exactly the right moment to, like... fire themselves into the hole.
Just straight into the hole. And then there's Harry standing there. Hermione comes whipping by, grabs his shirt this way, yanks him back this way.
Yes.
And then I'm to believe Emma Watson is holding Harry's whole body weight with one arm.
She's strong.
She doesn't look it.
Powerful.
Yes. People say that about her all the time.
And
yeah,
yes,
think how bad Draco,
true.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
smack.
Poor
yeah.
Draco.
Poor Tom Felton, man.
Right.
He got someone right in the face.
Yep. But fortunately, the book handles this situation quite a bit better, and Crookshanks is able to creep forward and place his paws on the knot of the trunk. And abruptly, the tree goes still as marble.
I know, man. If you were like Harry and Hermione, Crookshanks' behavior must just seem bonkers at this point.
Yes.
Whose side are you on?
What class did we miss?
I know, right? Like, what are you? You're attacking the rat, but now you're helping us? How do you know about the tree? Where'd you come from the woods?
We have so many questions.
Yeah.
Crookshanks, if Crookshanks could talk, you know.
Yeah, right? Like, apparently he could talk to Sirius, you know.
Apparently, yeah.
There's that. So this is kind of the question that they're asking. They're like, how did he know? And Harry's like, he's friends with that dog. Harry said, grimly.
I know. It's so on the nose.
It is. It's a little bit like,
the dog that we thought was the Grim. I get it. That's clever. That's clever.
But either way, Crookshanks pauses the tree for them so they can crawl in through the secret passage. It says, Harry went next. He crawled forward, head first.
Look, whenever entering subterranean unknown environments, head first.
Right?
Yes.
Like, why land on your feet when you could land on your head?
Yes.
You know? Yeah, so anyway, I guess it works out. He doesn't, like, break his neck or something.
Yeah, he ends up being fine. That would be another interesting twist to the end of the story, is that it's like, you know, there's all this stuff about Voldemort. Harry just breaks his neck falling into the tree.
Going into the tree.
Darn it!
Oh, man! Whoops.
Dumbledore's like, there goes that whole plan.
Yeah, so they start wondering. They start wondering, where does this passage go? Harry says, I don't know. It's marked on the Marauder's map, but Fred and George said no one's ever gotten into it, which is just good setup from earlier when Fred and George are apparently just showing him how to get to Hogsmeade, and you don't think about it that much, and they're like, oh, yeah, the Wampic Willow's over this one. Wouldn't worry about that.
Right, yeah. Yes, yeah. But, yeah, it is good that it's like been brought up before now, so you're kind of like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But it's also surprising that like they actually don't know about this, like, because on the Marauder's map, if you go near the one-eyed witch, like, it says, like, tap it, you know?
Maybe the issue is that you have to get so close to the trunk of the tree that you're already being, like, walloped.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So it's like, you can't get that close.
I guess so.
But maybe if you did. But the thing I do think it's important, because it comes up later, is just the fact that it does also set up right now for later that it just goes off the edge of the map. So it means that you can see things that are going on up until this particular moment.
Yeah.
Which I do think is going to end up being like a kind of interesting. This is like a thinker, and I was asking you a little bit, you know, backstage before we came out, what your thoughts on it are, and I won't apply it as if this is like a fact, but maybe something for us to consider as we go forward is the possibility that Dumbledore himself has also crafted his own version of the Marauder's map.
It almost seems crazy that like it feels like why wouldn't he have? You know, like,
yes,
it seems like maps of Hogwarts would just be like a handy thing to have since it's so big and changing.
It does. And I know we're jumping back a little bit here, but it reminds me so much of like Christmas in year one when he like gifts the invisibility cloak and then he like happens to figure out like where Harry is. But like if he had gifted the cloak and then like watched Harry over like the next couple of nights to see like what he did with it, then it would like be plenty explanation. But also as we scoot forward, the reason I bring it up and what I want to keep an eye out for as we move forward is just that Dumbledore comes around on the innocence of Sirius Black in a way that I feel like is almost putting a tremendous amount of faith in the testimony of the kids.
Yeah.
Like, even he himself says, like, this doesn't look good for Sirius.
Yeah. I mean, he's talked to Sirius and then he's talking to Harry and Hermione and he's like, yeah, his version doesn't look great. Snape's makes more sense, and he hasn't acted innocent.
Right. Yeah. But if he also saw Peter Pettigrew on the map, then it's like he would know, like, I have a map that proves Peter was there.
Right.
We don't have Peter to prove my claim. However, like, the map never lies.
Right.
You know, so anyway, that's sort of like an aside, like a little, like, sub-theory to keep an eye on as we
go
forward.
Right, does Dumbledore have his own map?
Yeah.
Which never tells anybody about.
The Marauders also wouldn't want people getting to Lupin when he's in the Shrieking Shack. So not having the knot on the map makes sense.
Oh, that's a good point. So basically the idea is that the Marauders would know, and actually it'll even come up in this chapter as kind of like a case in point, but you don't want people, if somebody else found the Marauders map, you don't want them finding it, accessing the Whomping Willow, because then if you ended up doing that, you may end up accidentally encountering Lupin in werewolf form.
Which is the exact prank they pull on Snape.
which is the exact, that they do this exact thing.
This exact thing, yeah.
So maybe if they made a special map just for Snape that had nothing but like a dotted line to the Whomping Willow.
Touch the knot, yeah. Whoops. It does seem like I always like to think that the map is specifically programmed for Snape. For the insulting part.
Yes,
not just, and it wouldn't just insult anybody, but it knows that it's Snape.
And it's like, okay, we got these. And it would be fun if they had like, they were each like, okay guys, the assignment for this weekend, write 50 insults in case he finds it 50 times.
Yeah, right. We got a whole list of things.
We got a bundle.
He can find this over and over. Yeah, but either way, Harry and Hermione go down the secret passageway, and they say it felt at least as long as the one to Honeydukes, which, if you remember from earlier chapters, is like a 50-minute walk.
It's too far. Yeah.
Like, and then remember again, Ron is being dragged by a dog with a broken leg and a squirming rat in his hands.
Yes.
Who does not want to be there.
That is the picture.
This is what's happening. This is Ron. Like, we're not giving Ron enough credit for enduring this pain.
Maybe he should be a seeker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's clutching
he
on to that
thing.
He's clutching it. You know?
Then he gets, even when they get to the Shrieking Shack, he takes him upstairs with the broken leg.
Upstairs.
Up the steps. I'm like, no, just come on, man.
How badly is Ron's leg broken?
I know.
And how many times is it broken?
I know. Gosh. It is.
Yeah,
that is.
Madame Pomfrey sees it and she's like, oh, geez.
Jeez. Maybe we should call Gilderoy.
Yeah. Just start fresh.
Just start over. Mm-hmm. We're just getting a brand new leg in here.
Yeah.
let's see. So anyway, they get to the Shrieking Shack. They get in there. I love the description too. It says paper was peeling from the walls, which I love the idea that like Dumbledore building the shack is like, let's decorate it. You want some wallpaper in here?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was like a day where he was just like going through magazines, yeah, being like, oh yes,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Paisley,
lilac,
yeah. Lockhart has been too present in this chapter.
I know. Where did Lockhart come from?
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. So I love the idea that they decorated the Shrieking Shack. That's super fun. And then we get to see that all the furniture is broken as though somebody had smashed it. That somebody is obviously Lupin.
Yes,
we'll
indeed.
We'll learn about in the next chapter. Yeah, or Dumbledore. Yeah, the only other person.
This is, yeah, Dumbledore. Dumbledore's going like blowing off some steam.
He's got like a rage room. Yeah, who said that? Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a, yeah. There's all sorts of examples, but one in particular that I feel like the book zeroes in on. It says Harry looked around. His eyes fell on a wooden chair near them. Large chunks had been torn out of it. One of the legs had been ripped off entirely. That's the Dumbledore one.
Yeah.
Like, he just got in there one day and he was like, "That's it.
That's it.
I'm breaking it.
I am mad."
Ghosts didn't do that, he said slowly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, what was your thought?
Well, what about the piano? Why did they put a piano in there?
Oh, is that a
movie? I think
there
it's
is
a
piano
movie.
In the movie, isn't there? Yeah,
yeah, because I think that was there specifically so that they could have Wormtail run across it.
Yeah,
and have it
make
like,
those like yeah, yeah, sounds. Yeah. I don't think they mention a piano in the book. Maybe it's there.
Could you imagine though if like that was like what he was doing in like his werewolf days, was
taking
up the piano?
Lupin the musical werewolf? That'd
yes,
be great.
Yes.
Yes.
I would go to that dueling piano bar in a heartbeat.
Dude, I would go like that should have been the Harry Potter stage show, is just Lupin the Werewolf the musical.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They never say there's not a piano.
That's true.
You know what?
We can only
assume. That's a good point. We can canonically add it right now.
Right?
This is the moment. Good
call.
Here
we go.
Good call.
There we go. So there was a piano.
Yeah.
Okay. Lightly
scratched.
Well played.
Yeah. Well played. Worn in.
It looked worn in.
Yeah. All those like fangy fingers, it feels like, would be like, you know, really like putting some divots in
the
ivory.
I would love the optimism of Dumbledore that, like, you know, music is a magic greater than all things. He needs a piano, you know? Like, this
Lupin's
will help.
Like, no, what I need is friends.
Yeah.
Friends, Dumbledore.
Friends, Dumbledore. There we go. Let's see. Either way, everything else is covered in a thick layer of dust except the floor, where a wide shiny stripe has been made by someone dragging a broken-legged kid up the stairs.
They reached the dark landing. Knox, they whispered together to turn off Lumos. And this is just kind of fun because I feel like this is such a well-known spell. This is the first usage of it in the entire series.
Oh, nice.
It's the first time we've heard Knox.
Yeah. Knox also, this is like another weird one where it's like, Nox is not the spell to, like, turn off lights. It is a spell to turn off Lumos.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So it's like, this is like where, like, when you see Dumbledore use the put outer, it's like, why don't you just use Nox? And it's like, because you can't do that. There's not a spell to put out the lights.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's like an oddly unique brand of magic. And this kind of, like, again, detours just a little bit, but it's one of our Fantastic Beasts theories because, Fantastic Beasts revolves very heavily around the idea of the Obscurus, and while we're seeing the Obscurus like terror through New York City, it also happens to turn off the lights.
Yes.
And we know that Dumbledore has a special relationship with Obscurus because Ariana, his younger sister, was one.
Right, and so he has the Deluminator, which is of his own creation, possibly unique.
Yes.
Yeah. So it too can turn off the lights.
Right.
So coincidence?
Is it like a little piece of the Obscurus?
In there. Sucking up light, transporting Ron around to convenient locations.
Yeah.
kind of makes me think on what they did before Nox was created. Was it just that they used it and then they just couldn't?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. What came first, Lumos or Nox?
Yeah, right.
Because if it was Lumos,
yeah,
a bunch of people are having to, like, it's like when you put your phone in your pocket with, like, flashlight still on.
Right.
You know?
It's like, this is just all the time.
Just that. Yeah. Like, oh man, we really got to work on this one.
Yeah, Knox.
Knox. Oh
go.
Man.
And okay. Then I also love how they go up the stairs to try and find where Ron is. And I love how Harry enters the room, wand held tightly before him. Harry kicked the door wide open, like he's like on like the SWAT team or something.
Yes. Yeah. Like,
police. Auras.
Wizard.
Wizard.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rocket Money. And look, I don't know about you guys, but keeping track of all of my different subscriptions is hard. Like, whether it's for work or for personal use, I have over like 10 different monthly subscriptions and then a handful of like annual and semi-annual ones to boot. And that's actually pared down from what it was. When I first started using Rocket Money, I was thrilled and also a little like dismayed to discover that I had plenty of subscriptions that we had no use for anymore. And I could quickly and easily cancel with just a few clicks in the app. But the ones that remain also still matter, because if you haven't noticed, prices seem to be going up lately, and Rocket Money is really great about letting me know whenever this happens. Like, have you ever signed up for something that's like five bucks for 6 months, and then after that it's like 20 bucks every month? Yay, we didn't tell you. Whoops. That's because Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps lower your bills so you can actually grow your savings. And what I really love is the dashboard. It's super easy to understand and just see all of these expenses neatly laid out in one spot. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Just cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/griffin. That's rocketmoney.com/griffin. rocketmoney.com/griffin.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Acorns. Y'all, I remember way back when I was 16 and opening my first checking account, there were two banks offering two different incentives. One would give you $20 for opening a student account, and the other would round up all of your purchases to the next whole dollar and put the excess into like a side account. So if the total was $19.25, the leftover 75 cents would go there. And I loved the idea of the roundups, but being a 16-year-old and mildly short-sighted, I took the $20. Years later, when I discovered that Acorns does exactly this thing, I was beyond thrilled and signed up right away. In fact, the day that my daughter Addison was born, I set up her own account and started sending all of my roundups to her for when she gets older. The thing is, Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invest your money for you. So head to acorns.com/griffin or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today.
A magnificent four-poster bed.
Yes.
Dumbledore was having fun shopping for this
place. He was.
I have an idea. Why don't we build a house? Hey, what? We could decorate it with wallpaper.
Dumbledore, really?
Dumbledore, come on.
Do we need all this? A four-poster bed! A big one!
A piano!
It's honestly kind of lavish.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice place. Here we go. But this is where we get the reveal from Ron, where they say, "Where's the dog?" "Not a dog," Ron moaned, his teeth gritted with pain. "I bet." "Harry, it's a trap. He's a dog. He's an animagus." Oh man, this is like good. This to me, this line. So when we were kids, our dad obviously read us the books. We've talked about it a lot. But this chapter in particular, when we got to this one, was I think where I was like, I can't wait anymore. I can't wait till next weekend. So I just went and took the book and just read the ending. But this was the first chapter I just read by myself. So like reading this line, it like always transports me like back to our childhood home. Like, what?
That's like, that's the moment when Harry Potter became yours.
Oh,
you know, like it's not. It wasn't like a. It wasn't just like just story time anymore.
Right.
Now like, it's like, okay. No, right,
I
need
gotta
to
take
know.
It into my own hands. I need to know what happens.
Yep.
I don't. Yeah.
Pretend to be surprised next time.
I did. I think Dad knew. I think Dad knew. He was like, "That's fine. Just don't tell your brothers." You know? I'm telling you now.
Thanks. Yeah. Now, this was the moment.
This is the moment.
Maybe
right
we
here.
Need couples counseling. Yeah.
I don't deny it. And there it was. It was Sirius Black. Boom. Who then uses Expelliarmus, which is of course like Harry's big move. So like retroactively, this is sort of like a little hint that he's not such a bad guy, that he uses like Expelliarmus, like the disarming spell, instead of just like hurting them. Because obviously if he wanted to murder them, he could just do it.
Yes, right, yes. Yep. And this is actually where I do think that the writing is quite clever, because I think it can be in, it's like walking a tightrope of intention.
Yeah.
You know, so especially like whenever we listen with Jim Dale, he's giving Sirius like such like a raspy, kind of like intense sounding voice, like the I thought you'd come and help your friend. And it, I mean, like, you know, that's a line that could mean a multitude of things. But obviously once you know Sirius a lot better, it's sort of like I thought you would help your friend because that is what your father would have also done.
Yeah, like everything he says has to be interpreted poorly by Harry, but makes sense in retrospect.
Right, because yeah. Again, what you're supposed to think here is like, I dragged your best friend away, and I thought that would be a really good fishing lure for you.
Right, and like I knew your father so well, I could trap him.
Yes, kind of thing. You like, took the bait.
Yes, yeah. So Harry thinks he's being taunted. He's not. He's actually complimenting him,
yes.
Saying that he's just like his dad, who was his best friend. So there's that, but it's not having that intended effect on Harry, because a boiling hate erupted in Harry's chest right here. And this is like such a moment for Harry. So for the first time in his life, he wanted his wand back in his hand, not to defend himself, but to attack, to kill. So this is like as dark as Harry ever gets. And it's like angrier. He is angry at Sirius here than I think he ever is at like Voldemort even.
Yeah, you know? I mean, right, because and I think like the relationship between Harry, what he knows, and in this situation with Sirius, it's like, you betrayed my parents, my life has been what it is because of the actions that you made. Like, he hates him for that, whereas like Voldemort, he like Harry stands like in opposition to,
right, like,
you know,
he's like a big evil force,
right,
and like Voldemort attacking Harry's parents is not, it's like there's nothing like necessarily personal about it. It's just like Harry is just like an obstacle in his way.
Right, right. Right. And I think that it probably ultimately goes to show realistically both with Harry and the Marauders and of course Ron and Hermione as well, is just how much friendship is valued by all of the key characters,
right,
in this story.
Right.
Yeah.
Because yeah, then when it comes to Sirius, it's extremely personal. It's like,
yes,
well, Voldemort never even could have done it.
Right.
Like, you were their best friend and you betrayed them and now I want to kill you.
Right.
But so, and then speaking of the power of friendship or whatever, Ron, in his horrible, tattered state, says, if you want to kill Harry, you'll have to kill us too. Which, this is one of those lines, just, like, I highlighted, I was like, heck yeah, Ron!
I know!
This is one, like, in the movie, they just give that line to Hermione for no reason.
I know, yeah, like, this is one that's kind of vital to Ron here, especially as Ron is kind of representing the serious of the group.
Yeah.
Like, he is like the like perennial best friend.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to imagine that inside of this moment, like, Sirius is looking into the eyes of himself, you know, like,
yeah,
with Ron saying that. He's gonna say the same sentence in the next few pages anyway.
Yeah.
Like, that he would have died for his friends.
Yeah, pretty much. So then you have like this moment where he says, lie down, you'll damage that leg even more. And that's another like clue to the real Sirius.
Right.
Like, he,
yes,
like, honestly doesn't want Ron to hurt his leg more.
Right.
And then Harry, what does he say? Did you hear me? Ron said, you'll have to kill all three of us. And now this is where Sirius starts to be exceptionally vague.
Choose your words better.
Yeah. His response is, there'll only be one murder here tonight. Like, dude, I think what you meant to say was, that rat is a man.
Let me explain.
Or maybe just like, I don't want to kill any of you.
Right,
that would have been good too.
Right,
that would have been good too. Instead of, actually, I am going to kill someone. You're right.
Yes,
you're
yes.
You're right, yeah.
I know you guys are terrified. Mm-hmm. I am here to kill.
Yes, right. You think I'm here to kill. I'm not here to kill all three of you. I'm here to kill one person.
Yeah. You don't happen to realize that there's another person.
You don't know
what's
in the room.
Right,
so
right.
I don't know why you didn't get that. Anyway, it's not going to be his last time doing this either.
Nope.
Oh, boy. And so, let's see. Harry, of course, thinks he's talking just still about killing himself. Didn't care last time, did you? Didn't mind slaughtering all those muggles to get at Pettigrew. And this is just like, that using the name Pettigrew here is just like good refresher for the reader, because Peter's name, I think, has only been mentioned twice so far.
Yes.
So like you're about to get a big reveal that Scabbers is Pettigrew, and it's not going to land that good if you've forgotten his name. So,
right.
Yeah.
He's kind of been forgettable.
He has been kind of forgettable.
Which,
yeah.
Honestly, at my core, that's sort of where I want Peter to be.
I agree.
Forgettable.
Forgettable. Yeah.
But then we do have one of these moments, and I thought this was really kind of hilarious, because Harry's obviously feeling very baited by Sirius in this moment. He's like, you killed my mom and dad. And a few chapters back, when we were talking about how Harry and Ron were just being just truly awful 13-year-olds, we got a really great message from somebody on our Patreon that was like, I love how in so many different instances there's well-crafted like reasons and theories and research that goes into explaining away the plot holes, and then other times it's they were 13,
right? Yeah.
And in this exact moment, Harry is falling into that exact same thing. It says he had forgotten about magic. He had forgotten that he was a short and skinny 13-year-old, yeah. Whereas Black was a full-grown man,
right? Yeah. So he just like tackles him.
He does. Yes. Yeah. He punches him in the face.
In the face. He just rears back.
Yeah.
Punches him with, right with his hand there. And then it says, perhaps it was the shock of Harry doing something so stupid, but Black didn't raise the wands in time. And it's like, I think that's, of course, Harry's interpretation of things. But really, it's just like, I don't think Sirius wants to hurt Harry. So he's like, oh, well, what do I do?
I don't think Sirius wants to hurt Harry. I don't think Sirius would hurt Harry. And I think probably on some level, Sirius believes he deserves to be punched in the face.
Also that, yes. Yeah. I think he's like, yeah. I did basically kill them. So there we go.
Choose your words.
Choose your words. Yeah, dude. Yeah, seriously. Then you have, let's see. So, yeah, seriously, indeed.
Seriously.
So all three of them are sort of like, they just turn into a big scrum here. You have Hermione's foot swing out of nowhere. Hermione's dishing out all sorts of muggle violence in this book. You know what I mean? She's punching people. She's kicking people.
Kicking people.
You know?
Who knew?
That strength, you know?
Yes.
Powerful.
Powerful.
Powerful. Yeah. There we go. And then we have Ron had thrown himself on Black's wand, handed Harry's heart, and Harry heard a faint clatter. So, like, Ron is joining the scrum with his broken leg. Like, round of applause for Ron. Like,
yeah,
dude.
Yes. Yeah, right? Round of applause for Ron. There we go.
Gosh.
And someone in the audience said it, and the rat.
Yeah.
Is he still clutching
it? He's still
it?
Holding the rat. Yeah.
So we have a one-leg broken Ron Weasley here,
yeah.
Who's been dragged up a flight of stairs, holding a rat, tackling a grown man.
Yeah. Doing it.
At a boy.
He's just like his brothers. He's probably fine.
That's it. That's
exactly.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so anyway, all of this ends in Harry holding Sirius at wand point, where he says, going to kill me, Harry. And this immediately starts reminding me of the Draco and Dumbledore scene from several books later.
Yes.
It's almost the same scene where it's like, here's what Harry has been thinking about all year. The moment is here. He's got Sirius at wand point. He wants to do it. He's been thinking about doing it, and like, what's he gonna do?
I know, it's kind of unbelievable. Like, I almost want to go and compare the text side by side for these two situations, because we've got his voice is shaking slightly, but his wand hand was quite steady.
Yep.
You killed my parents, said Harry.
Sirius says, I don't deny it. Dude,
it's like, I didn't think
it'd get this far. Don't deny Sirius. But if you knew the whole story, like, yeah, maybe you should tell the whole story, dude. Gosh, yeah.
Yes.
And fast.
Yeah, like, yes. Like right now, immediately.
Yeah, so that's basically what he said. You've got to listen to me. You'll regret it if you don't. Then Harry, this is just a terrible line for him. It's like, you never heard her, did you? My mom trying to stop Voldemort killing me. And you did that. You did it. And it's just like, oh that hurts.
That does hurt.
That hurts.
Especially, for Sirius, who, like, you know, loved Lily and James.
Yeah.
So even having to hear Harry say to him, like, I had to hear my mom through time.
Right.
Because of what you did.
Right.
And it's like, it's terrible. Like, if you're serious in this moment, like, this is crushing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and even all of this, like, Hermione is, like, having a dry sob off in the corner as well.
she's just recharging. Yeah,
yeah, he kicked a little too hard. Let's see. So then Crookshanks jumps on Sirius's chest to try and protect him. Harry's like, well, so what if I have to kill the cat too? You know? I'll do it.
He's a dog I'll do person. It.
He's an owl person, you know.
I was going to say he's a dog person, but the other person he wants to kill is a dog.
I know. Yeah, so maybe not.
And it's his cat.
And it's his cat.
It could be his cat.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes, if Black wanted to save it, that only proved to care more for Crookshanks than for Harry's parents, who belong to his parents. Yeah. Yeah. So then, yeah, he's like trying to psych himself up for it. He's going to kill Black. He had to kill Black. This was his chance. And then this line too also reminds me of Draco and Dumbledore. Like, the yes. seconds lengthened and still Harry stood frozen there. Wand poised, Black staring at him, Crookshanks on his chest. And it's like, it is this. I mean, this is exactly what happens. Like, Draco has like several long seconds where like, this is it.
Right.
Do it. But yep. But he doesn't.
And interestingly, like, the scene ends up kind of going the same way,
yeah.
which is that, like, you know, for Draco, the Death Eaters storm on scene and Snape basically steps in. And in this instance, Harry's just frozen there and then Lupin
yeah.
steps in on scene.
And then Snape.
And then Snape. Yeah.
Although Snape, ironically, I think would have much happier killed Sirius instead of Dumbledore.
I would agree with yeah. that. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Seems like he's pretty much down for that one.
Yes. But so we hear, so he's got him at one point and then they hear the door open downstairs. Hermione screams out, "We're up here." And then, well, I didn't notice this until this read through because like Harry realizes that whoever just arrived is going to stop him from doing whatever he wants to do. He says, Harry gripped his wand convulsively and it says, "Do it now," said a voice in his head. And I'm like, is that the Horcrux? Like, is that the voice in his head?
It has to be.
I think it is. I think that's like the little, because this is as angry, I think, as Harry is ever going to get. This is like the closest to the dark side he ever gets. And like, despite having the Horcrux inside him, it like never affects him. Ever. But like in this one moment where he desperately wants to kill somebody, like it can get like a whisper up.
Yes.
Like, do it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is almost what you have to imagine is going through Ron's head when he's wearing like the Horcrux locket later on in Deathly Hallows. Like
yeah.
where it's just like it's all those things that like it says to him, like when Voldemort comes out of the locket and tries to be like, you know, Hermione likes him better, your mother likes him better, all that type of stuff. It's like you have to imagine those are the little voices like
yeah.
that were constantly like pegging Ron in the back
right.
of the mind.
Yeah.
So I do think, for what it's worth, that this is the Horcrux.
Yeah,
the
I think it
Voldemort.
Is too. Yep. Yeah, I think that's what's kind of getting through there.
The but. Voice being described as a voice and not just as his thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, separates it.
Right.
I agree. Yes,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, the voice being described as a voice and not just Harry thinking.
Right.
It feels like it's definitely like changing something.
Right.
Said it's a voice.
A
in
voice.
His head.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like yeah. Like no one read this in their first pass and was like, "What voice was that?"
Yeah. Who yeah. could that be?
Because
we nope. don't know that information yet.
Yeah, we don't know that information yet. So anyway, Lupin indeed arrives upstairs. He also shouts Expelliarmus, which more Harry signature spells going on here. Which I guess it's not really a signature spell until Goblet, but we'll get there. And then, yeah, Harry stood there feeling suddenly empty. He hadn't done it, which, like, ultimately, good call.
Yes.
Good call. Good instincts, as usual.
Right. Like, it says, yep. like, yeah, and that's exactly what I wrote. I actually love that you said that. Yeah, it said his nerves had failed him, and I said, no, his instincts just won out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that. Exactly. Then Lupin starts talking and says, "Where is he, Sirius?" And it's like, I'm sorry. This is more. Now Lupin's starting to be super vague. It's like, "Where is he, Sirius? Why don't you just say, 'Where's Peter?'" Like, "Where's Peter Pettigrew? Where's the rat? Where's anything? Anything, not just this vague he." Because I'm sure also if you're Harry and Ron, the other he's in the room, you're like, "What do you mean? We're like right here, bro."
Present.
Yeah. 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 Who was Lupin talking about? Who indeed, you guys? Who indeed? So Black raises, yeah, he says, face expressionless, slowly raised his empty hand and pointed straight at Ron.
Was there any point where you were supposed to think in this moment that Ron was quietly and secretly a traitor.
Yeah, right.
For like one sentence, it's like, oh man,
what?
That's not good.
Yeah,
it's like,
wow, that doesn't even make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it basically it seems like almost immediately, like it says, Harry glanced around at Ron, who looked bewildered.
Yeah. Me?
Me?
But then this is a pretty cool sentence too. It says, why? Then so this is Lupin talking. He says, why hasn't he showed himself before now? Again, not saying Peter. Unless Lupin's eyes suddenly widened as though he was seeing something beyond black, something none of the rest of you could see. Unless he was the one. Unless you switched without telling me. So this moment is when Lupin realizes that Peter and Sirius switched places as the secret keeper, which means that he arrived at the Shrieking Shack without quite realizing this yet.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. I think this is one of those rare situations where it's like if you can change one piece of knowledge, like take anything that you believe to be like absolute fact and then like change one detail about it, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Right.
Like that change, like that, like, I think in Lupin's mind, this whole situation is clicking together so quickly.
Well, because to him, like, none of it makes sense.
Right. It's like Peter Pettigrew can't be here. He's
like, Peter
Pettigrew,
like, I don't think the original situation made sense. It's just like, Sirius turned on James? Like, I think for 13 or whatever, 12 years, he's been, like, struggling with, like, that doesn't make sense.
Like, he would never do
that. Like, he just wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, how could it be true? It's like, it must be because it is, but it isn't. And it isn't. So.
Yep. And so sure enough, basically, and it's nice that it's written this way as well, because Lupin is basically saying he's coming to the conclusion that Sirius can then verify versus a situation where Sirius is like, we switched, Lupin. And it'd be like, oh, because then you have to believe Sirius. But in this case, Lupin is getting there on his own, which I think is better.
It is better because then he pulls him up and embrace Black like a brother. So which I just love. It's like the immediate forgiveness. He's just like, oh, no. Dude, made a mistake.
And you know with Lupin, like, a big mistake.
And he's like, you can see him like his brain can't possibly fathom all of the like suffering Sirius has had to do. But it's like, oh, 12 years. Oh, my 12. God. Oh,
I mean, but then also think about it from Lupin's perspective, because he's a werewolf. He doesn't have like, you know, it's not easy for Lupin to go out and make friends in the wizarding world.
Yeah.
We've seen the prejudice from like Ron even.
Yeah.
And it's like for him, Lupin is getting a true friend back for the first time in 12 years too.
Yeah,
like this is
much.
The first time he's had a friend since all three of them were lost in the same day.
Yeah. Oh, so. For Lupin, that was because you're right. James died. Peter apparently died. And Sirius got sent to Azkaban. Apparently for having killed the other two.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So it's like, you know.
Jeez.
It's a big moment.
Yeah. Bad day for him.
But yeah, speaking of big moments for Lupin, another one's about to come down the pipes because Hermione has figured out something rather important about Lupin.
Yes. Yes. She says, I trusted you, and all this time you've been his friend. And it's like, I haven't been Sirius's friend, but I am now. Let me explain. And Hermione's not having it anymore. She like totally outs him. He's a werewolf, which this is like rare prejudice by Hermione that like, oh, he's a werewolf. That means he's bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. Like she's definitely like sorted him into a column incorrectly.
Right. Yes. Yep.
And actually I said Ron's prejudice, but we're about to see it now actually is when it's about to happen. But basically, Hermione does believe that Lupin also wants Harry dead and that he's been helping Black get into the castle. And I love that, like, the line, like, where, like, Lupin immediately kind of goes back, and he does this several times throughout the rest of the scene, into, like, that teacher,
yes,
like, position. Yeah. He's like, only one out of three, I'm afraid. Not up to your usual standards.
Yeah. Just very patiently, like, oh, okay, let me turn this into a lesson.
Right.
But he won't deny that he's a werewolf. And then Ron immediately is just like, get away from me, werewolf. So it's like both of them, Ron and Hermione, a little bit of werewolf prejudice there.
Yep.
Yep. But then Hermione realized, or, you know, Lupin's trying to figure out, how'd you figure it out? And he says, because of Professor Snape's essay. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty much why he did that.
Yep. Right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He assigned that essay hoping somebody would realize what my symptoms meant.
Yep.
Which does bring me back to my little, like, you know, like the slight that he throws back at Snape with the vampire essay. Whether or not he truly believes Snape to be a vampire, I love the thought that he was like,
There's enough evidence.
Yeah.
I'll let them draw their own conclusions.
People will see what they want to see.
Because you know what? You know what? He didn't test them on vampires in the final exam.
Exactly. Yeah. So why? What's up? What's up with that
why
one?
Was there a vampire essay? Yeah.
We're not ready for vampires.
We're not ready for vampires. Yeah, God.
Oh, man. We do get the great compliment from Lupin. And it's a good one to come from Lupin. But you are the cleverest witch of your age I've ever met, Hermione. Which is high praise coming from Lupin.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's see. But then he reveals that, like, yeah, everyone already knows, or the staff do. And then Ron is a little more, another bad take for Rod. He says, Dumbledore hired you when he knew you were a werewolf? Is he mad? Which, yeah.
Some of the staff thought so, a.k.a. Snape.
Yeah.
One person.
Yes, he was really, really against it. But then Dumbledore is like, actually, yes, and I need you to do some complicated work for him.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Every month.
You're going to be happy about this, right?
You're going to be happy
about it. This will go well?
Yeah. Don't mess it up. You'll be fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he doubles down, though. I have not been helping Sirius. If you give me a chance, I'll explain. It's like, yes, get there quickly. He does separate Harry, Ron, and Hermione's wands and throw them back to them. And then he puts his away and he says, you're armed. We're not. Now will you listen?
Here we go.
I think it's a good, that's good, like, damage
good
control.
Yeah.
That's a good way to, like, simmer people down a little
right?
bit.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah, so how do we know he was here? The map. It was in my office examining it. Like, you know, I love this reveal, too. This is all so fun. Just like, of course I know how to work it, said Lupin. I helped write it. I'm Mooney. That was my friend's nickname for me at school. Like, I love that, like, they all, I don't know, I just love this. This little bit here that he's revealing it. Yeah, oh, I helped write it. Like, earlier in the book, he's like, we've met.
We've met.
Yeah.
I'm them. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's exactly what it reminds me of is when he's doing the werewolf assignment for his RWLs. He's sitting in my chair.
Yeah, right? There it is. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, I guess he was staring at it. This is maybe like a. He says he was looking at the map because he thought Harry, Ron, and Hermione might try to sneak out of the castle to visit Hagrid, and they did. To which I'm like, but you didn't do anything about it.
I know.
Like, it's like, I wonder if Harry, Ron, and Hermione will do anything. Oh, they are.
Oh, they are indeed.
Well, let's see what happens.
Holy
danger! Crap! Is that Peter Pettigrew?
Yeah.
I gotta go.
I got places to be.
I gotta do some things.
Oh, man. But, yep. So then we do explain that you are able to spot somebody on the Marauder's map, even if you are under the invisibility cloak, which is just another one of those moments where it's like, the Marauder's map might be a little bit too powerful, given the fact that the...
I know. This feels like that sentence was written before it was decided the cloak was a hallow or something.
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
That was my read on it as well.
Now, you could have, like, the caveat of being that, like, the master of the invisibility cloak made the map.
There is always
that caveat.
Yeah.
So it's like, is there, like, well, normally it wouldn't, but because this person made it.
He was involved. We had to add, like, a special line of code. Right.
Exactly. I can give that light pass there.
I won't lose sleep over that one.
Yeah.
This is also, though, where he reveals that you were accompanied by somebody else.
Yeah.
Going through the passageway.
I know. Again, he says, what? No, we weren't. Just, I couldn't believe my eyes. How could he be with you? Dude, guys, just say it.
No one was with us, said Harry.
Yes. Yeah. And they're like, now I feel like they're just messing with them. They're like, how long you want to do this?
Yeah.
How long you want to?
We got them on, like, hook, line, and sinker right now.
You just want to keep gaslighting them on this? Or?
Right.
I know. That's exactly what it's like. They're like making eye contact. Like, oh, they don't get it yet. Okay, hold on.
Honestly, in like the TV show remake, I would not hate that. If in this moment, like, they're having, like, a special little, like,
like
a little tiny glint in their eye.
A little bit.
Yeah, you enjoying this? Me too.
Yeah, me too. It's like old times.
Yeah.
I saw him collide with you. Oh, watch as he pulled two of you into the Whomping Willow.
One of us.
like, nuh-uh.
Two of you.
Yeah,
we're not even milking it. That's what it says.
I know, yeah.
On the page.
These are the words.
Yeah. Finally, though, he says, do you think I could have a look at the rat? And then Ron's like, what's Scabbers got to do with it? To which, at this point, I'm almost like, Ron, Scabbers might have something to do with it.
Yeah, like, come on, dude.
Read the Shrieking Shack,
right? Yeah. Everything, said Lupin. Could I see him, please? He's being so polite.
Yes. Could I see him? please?
Can I see him, please? Yeah. So let's see. And you know, Ron is just like he doesn't have any idea what's going on here. And this is where they give them the big reveal. Like, that's not a rat. What do you mean? Of course he's a rat. No, he's not, said Lupin. He's a wizard, an animagus by the name of Peter Pettigrew.
Dun, dun,
dun.
Gasp.
Man.
Wow, we did it.
We did it. There you go. It's a good thing they reminded, because I think even the first time I read this when I stole it as a kid, I was like, who was Peter Pettigrew? that reveal wasn't as big on me. I'm like, was he that kid from earlier?
Did they mention that?
They mention him?
Who? I know, yeah. This is yeah. where we whenever we're theory writing, we have our search function of the entire book because we have the ebooks.
Yeah.
So it's like, hang on, when was Peter Pettigrew last mentioned? Oh, yeah, look at that.
In this chapter.
He was brought up.
Yeah.
There we go. We got it. We got it.
Bam.
But yeah, so that is a heck of a cliffhanger, for chapter 17, and sets us up for chapter 18, Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs.
Oh, yeah. Such a good one.
So this is the part of the show where we would normally see if Jay had a review. However, since we have some audience members handy, maybe you guys would be willing to give it to us. What do you think? How do we do? Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. That was awesome.
Do you want to close out for podcast reasons?
Oh, yeah. I can close out for...
you still have one thing left to do.
Yeah, I have one thing left to do here.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, so I think that is going to do it for this week here on Through the Gryffindor. But make sure you join us next week for Chapter 18, Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs on Through the Gryffindor. Bam. We did it.
Done. Yeah.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.